This is the NPR News Update. Minnesota's news on your schedule. It's Thursday, May 23rd. I'm John Wanamaker. St. Louis Park Public Schools have support staff on hand today to help students understand how a field trip took a tragic turn that left a child dead, two injured, and one missing. Rupa Shenoy reports.
Lilydale Regional Park is across the Mississippi River from downtown St. Paul. It's a hilly area with deep ravines, and it has a lot of limestone that holds fossils from the time when St. Paul was covered with seawater. Those fossils were the reason about 60 fourth graders from Peter Hobart Elementary School were there. St. Paul Fire Marshal Steve Zachard says the fossil hunt took a group of children at least a quarter of a mile off the road.
And it appears they were walking along in the ground after the rain we've had was so soft and it gave way and they fell into what became a hole and the earth came on top of them.
The whole hillside gave way, burying the children in a wave of gravel, rock, mud, and sand. Just after 1 p.m., the St. Paul Police and Fire Departments received a call about a group of kids trapped in what was then described as a gravel slide. It took 20 minutes for the first officers and firefighters on the scene to get to the children. They found one half buried. Zachard says the first responders dug frantically with their hands and shovels for an hour.
And while they were digging out the one child that was waist deep in the hole, that's when they uncovered the hand of the other one that later died.
It took another hour and a half to dig out the child who was completely buried. About 75 responders were on the scene.
One of the two injured had to be dug out, and he was lifted out by this State Patrol helicopter on the end of a rope, with a basket on the end of a rope, and a firefighter there to comfort him to make sure he didn't jump out.
The student was dropped off in adjoining Cherokee Park, where an ambulance was waiting. Three children were taken to Regents Hospital, where one was pronounced dead. After the initial recovery and rescue, search efforts continued for one more child. Authorities said the hillside was shifting and water was flowing down, filling the hole where the children had been found. Mud, slippery as motor oil, made the work too dangerous for emergency crews. St. Paul Public Works staff helped stabilize the hillside under searchlights. St. Paul Mayor Chris Coleman called the emergency crews heroes.
We've had some unbelievably heroic efforts on the part of our first responders that have put themselves, quite frankly, in a very dangerous, very precarious situation in an attempt to rescue the children that were trapped. And so our thoughts and prayers go out to the families, the children.
St. Louis Park Public Schools spokeswoman Sarah Thompson read from a statement by Superintendent Deborah Bowers. The statement said it's a sad time for the St. Louis Park school community.
We, like everyone else, want to understand how this tragedy occurred. We ask for thoughts and prayers for everyone involved.
The statement said St. Louis Park Public Schools will provide support for staff and students as long as needed. Rupa Shenoy, Minnesota Public Radio News.
Mayo Clinic's proposed 20-year, $5 billion investment plan to make its flagship Rochester campus a destination medical center is closer to becoming a reality. Governor Mark Dayton still has to sign the tax bill into law, but clinic, local, and state officials are celebrating the legislative victory, which commits $327 million in state aid for Rochester. Amid the celebration, lots of questions remain about how exactly the clinic plans to expand and how local taxpayers will contribute to the growth in Rochester. More from reporter Elizabeth Baer.
Hundreds of Mayo employees, local and state officials, even former Vice President Walter Mondale, filled the lobby of the Mayo building in Rochester Wednesday. They were there to celebrate what Mayo and government officials say is the largest economic development initiative in the state's history. Governor Mark Dayton described the passage of Mayo's expansion legislation as almost unprecedented.
If this expansion and leap forward were not happening in Rochester, Minnesota, it happened somewhere else in the country, we'd be the big losers and they'd be the big winners. I'm just very grateful that it's here in Minnesota.
Dayton says the most promising aspect of Mayo's proposal is the jobs it's expected to create in the next two decades. Mayo officials estimate the expansion will add up to 15,000 highly paid medical positions and another 25,000 spin-off jobs in southeastern Minnesota.
I mean, people work on this for 10, 20 years. I mean, those are careers. So put all the people who work, all the people who will be working professionally in the expanded facilities, And the transformation of downtown Rochester, just tremendously exciting.
But what that transformation in Rochester will look like is still unclear. State funds won't kick in until the Mayo Clinic invests at least $200 million in the city. Mayo President and CEO Dr. John Noseworthy says the clinic already has teams in place, mapping out the project's next steps. But he declined to give details about those plans on Wednesday.
We now have the opportunity to plan in a very specific way what happens. We can get input from everybody and in a disciplined way make sure we do this correctly for the next 20 years as we have for the last 20 years. So it won't be random. It won't be first to the table and let's do something over here. It'll be all knitted together in an integrated way for the city, the county, and the state.
In all, the clinic plans to invest $3.5 billion in capital improvements. That could include adding new space to the clinic's existing facilities, upgrading patient rooms, or building research or administrative buildings on existing parking lots. Mayo currently owns nearly 500 acres of land in Rochester to support its growth plans. The clinic also expects an estimated $2 billion in additional private investment. Once the governor signs the bill into law, Mayo will have 60 days to put together an 8-member nonprofit oversight board. The bill will also authorize the city of Rochester and Olmsted County to raise $128 million in local taxes to help with the expansion. City Council President Randy Staver says the legislation allows Rochester officials to raise those taxes by increasing the local sales tax, adding a food and beverage tax, and taxing certain entertainment events. Staver says the city still has to determine how it will make its obligation for Mayo's expansion plan work.
I think we'll want to choose tools that have the least amount of burden on taxpayers in general. That we don't want the taxpayers of Rochester to bear the burden of all of this. So we'll look to do things that are equitable and across a number of citizens and structure.
Olmsted County Board Chair Jim Beer says the county's $40 million share of the project will likely come from an increase in county taxes.
I would anticipate we'll have the wheelage tax, I would think, and maybe the sales tax. I don't know. We've got to talk about that. We've got to have some meetings with the other commissioners. But I think we'll do one for sure and maybe both.
Beer says he anticipates the county board will make those decisions by the end of the year. And Mayo officials say they'll release more information on their expansion plans later this summer. Elizabeth Baer, Minnesota Public Radio News, Rochester.
Governor Mark Dayton has signed an education budget bill that boosts funding for public schools and early childhood education over the next 2 years. As Tim Pugmire reports, Dayton praised both the bill and the tax increases that will pay for it.
There was no shortage of hyperbole during a brief signing ceremony for a bill that supporters had already claimed will create the world's best workforce. DFL Senator Chuck Wieger of Maplewood, the chair of the Senate Education Finance Committee, said the funding measure was a grand slam that will help turn the school financing tide of the past decade.
This is the best education bill to be signed in Minnesota history.
The $15.7 billion bill is the biggest piece of the state budget. It increases education spending by $485 million over current levels. The centerpiece is $134 million to fund a free all-day kindergarten option for families in every school district. There's also new money for early childhood education scholarships, special education programs, and a 1.5% increase in the basic per-pupil formula each of the next 2 years. Governor Dayton credited lawmakers for passing the bill and for passing a tax bill that raises $2 billion in new revenue. Dayton said Minnesota students were shortchanged for too long. He said the tax bill allows for a historic investment that will pay off for the entire state.
More money for education doesn't absolutely guarantee success, but less money for education absolutely guarantees failure. I mean, we're not going to improve test scores, close the achievement gap, or get our kids ready for a very competitive world by reducing the investment in education.
The bill also puts in place a new system for measuring student achievement. It repeals the high-stakes tests that students are currently required to pass before high school graduation. Dayton said those tests have been onerous and absurd.
There's kids who were denied diplomas and then found out halfway through the summer that the testing company had made mistakes in their grading, and they were denied publicly in front of their family, in front of their friends, a diploma because of the errors of the company, and nothing was done about it. So this has reached, you know, I'm for testing, I'm for accountability, but not past the point into absurdity, and that's where we've gone.
Republican lawmakers opposed the testing changes. They also questioned the spending increase. GOP Representative Kelby Woodard of Belle Plaine said he doesn't believe that putting more money into the same old programs is the way to close persistent achievement gaps. Woodard, who's the lead Republican on the House K-12 Education Finance Committee, also accused Democrats of using empty slogans and overselling the potential impact of all-day kindergarten.
There are many states that have kindergarten today, and they still struggle. So obviously that's the basis for this idea that we'll have the world's best workforce in 2027, is that because we have kindergarten, that all of a sudden all the other ills in our education system go away. So it's being touted as a silver bullet, and it's just not.
Woodard said some school districts are pleased about the all-day kindergarten funding, but others would prefer using the money for different priorities. He said local school leaders should have been given more flexibility to use the funding as they see fit. Tim Pugmire, Minnesota Public Radio News at the Capitol.
One thing that really sets the just-completed legislative session apart from other recent sessions is the availability of new money for the environment. After years of budget cuts and reallocation, state agencies now get a boost in funding and a mandate to use it effectively. Legislators also grappled with frac sand mining and solar power issues. Stephanie Hemphill has more.
The Pollution Control Agency's budget increased by about 6%, and the DNR got $15 million in new money, most of it going to forestry and groundwater work. Instead of increasing fees on water use and boat licenses, legislators tapped the general fund, now boosted by tax increases on the wealthy and cigarette smokers, and they used legacy sales tax money. Steve Morse, executive director of the Minnesota Environmental Partnership, says the infusion of new money made it an unusual session.
For the first time in a long time, we weren't cutting programs for our great outdoors. We were increasing. The increase that is going into the base going forward is about $25 million, which in the environment is a significant amount of money.
Legacy funding for clean water, the outdoors, parks, and the arts totaled nearly $500 million for the next 2 years. Near the top of the environmental wish list was a solar standard for the state. It's similar to the existing renewable electricity standard, which has helped Minnesota develop a thriving wind industry. The state's new goal is 1.5% of electricity generated from solar by 2020. Michael Noble with the nonprofit group Fresh Energy says even that small target will jumpstart a solar industry in the state.
The most important thing was getting started and creating a large market in the next 5 to 7 years is really more than sufficient to get going and get a lot of businesses growing in the solar sector.
Utilities said the mandate will result in unfair rate increases for customers. City-owned utilities and co-ops are exempted from the mandate. Thousands of residents of southeastern Minnesota came to the Capitol over the past several months to ask the legislature for a year-long moratorium and strong regulations on new mining for frac sand, the fine, hard silica sand that's used to produce oil and gas in other parts of the country. But the moratorium idea seemed to vaporize early in the session. Instead, legislators approved a permit requirement for any frac sand mine within a mile of a trout stream. Also, state agencies will set health limits for silica sand, along with air quality standards and mine reclamation rules. Bobby King with the Land Stewardship Project says people in the region are disappointed there are no hard and fast rules. They say protection will only come if state agencies are tough on the industry.
People went in with really high hopes and felt like they made a really good case for a moratorium. So people are discouraged a little bit, but still committed to making sure the frac sand industry doesn't destroy their community.
Some Iron Range legislators resisted some of the proposed measures. They worried the same requirements could eventually be imposed on taconite mines. But Dennis Egan, executive director of the Minnesota Industrial Sand Council, says it was a good compromise.
At the end of the day, I think what will happen is that if we implement what was talked about at the Capitol, we have a sand industry that can move forward in Minnesota, and our hope is that we will continue to do that.
A flap is brewing over the legislature's allocation of $3 million from the Legacy Fund to provide grants for work on aquatic invasive species. The Legacy Advisory Group had not reviewed the project, and some sportsmen's groups are asking the governor to line-item veto the $3 million, saying it's not for wildlife habitat. Environmental groups are pleased with the passage of something called the Clean Water Accountability Act. It requires the states to be more precise in identifying sources of pollution from farm fields. It also requires the state to set timelines and benchmarks to track progress in cleaning up lakes and rivers. The legislature also approved a stewardship program for paint to be organized and paid for by the industry, a ban on coal tar sealants for roads and driveways, and a streamlined process to make it easier for cities to organize solid waste collection. There's also a certification program for farmers who commit to keeping lakes and rivers clean. Stephanie Hempel, Minnesota Public Radio News.
This is the NPR News Update. We come your way every day around noon. It's Minnesota's news on your schedule. The group that pushed Minnesota lawmakers to legalize same-sex marriage invested more than $2 million in its successful lobbying effort. Minnesotans United for All Families disclosed that figure yesterday. The Minnesota Chamber of Commerce and XL Energy are the only entities to recently spend more than $2 million in a single year. Richard Carlbaum led Minnesotans United to two historic victories, the defeat of a constitutional amendment banning same-sex marriage last November and the recent passage of the same-sex marriage bill. Sasha Aslanian has this profile of Carlbaum and how he did it.
Richard Carlbaum didn't want to be profiled. "I would rather not," he responded in an email. "So many others beside me have made this happen."
Minnesota, you did it!
Even standing at a podium in the Capitol Rotunda, Carlbaum would rather turn the spotlight on the 27,000 Minnesotans who got involved in the campaign to defeat the marriage amendment and then wanted to push for same-sex marriage. In the Minneapolis campaign office, due to be shuttered at the end of the month, surrounded by posters of pivotal legislative districts, rainbow flags, and pizza boxes, Carlbaum reflects on what he just witnessed.
"These people, for the first time in their lives, came to a phone bank, got trained on how to have a difficult conversation, organized their neighborhood, organized their family, organized their workplace, put a bumper sticker or a lawn sign in their yard for the first time. And now, I think this is the case. They understand what it's like to change the world. And I simply have a front row seat."
Carlbaum got his front row seat in September of 2011 when Minnesotans United, the group created by Outfront Minnesota and Project 515, hired him as a campaign manager. Carlbaum had worked for the mayor of St. Paul, run Democratic Congressman Tim Walz's re-election campaign, and been elected mayor of St. Joseph as an openly gay man right after graduating from St. John's University with a degree in political science. The 30-year-old had never run a statewide campaign, but Minnesotans United board chair Christine Almeida says it was clear he was the right person for the job.
"What we saw in Richard was a really clear political thinker who could cut to the chase of messaging and also really cut to the chase in terms of his decision-making ability. And that was really appealing to us, knowing the kind of campaign we were going to have to run."
Almeida says Carlbaum had to deal with something most campaigns never face, a flood of interest.
"Our problem very clearly from the beginning was, how do we harness all of the interest and goodwill and energy that people have around this issue to be able to allow everybody to participate?"
Carlbaum wanted people from all political stripes and backgrounds to be able to plug into the organization and contribute their talents. Gay rights campaigns in other states had suffered from infighting. Carlbaum says he lost sleep not over his opponents, but over people on his own side. The stakes were high for everyone. They had one shot to defeat an amendment that had won in 30 states. Minnesotans United poured money into research and decided key messages would be love and commitment. Tracy Call was part of a group that wanted something different. The lesbian and single mother says she felt a mama bear motivation to defeat the amendment. She thought Minnesotans United wasn't reaching some voters with a message that would resonate.
Civil rights and kind of anti-big government would be the key to getting this younger, more male libertarian who is going to vote Republican, but, you know, don't mess up the Constitution.
Call runs an ad agency and made a pitch to work with Minnesotans United, or MU. She believed talking about marriage discrimination and not tampering with the Constitution were powerful arguments. MU leaders, including Carlbaum, disagreed, saying those hadn't worked in other states. So Call and a small group of others launched their own group, Minnesotans for Equality, or MFE, in April of 2012. Call hasn't spoken publicly about the falling out until now.
So unfortunately, instead of seeing MFE as an ally and an additive voice in this battle, MU name called and they bullied and they tried to block us from speaking out in almost every way that they could.
Carlbaum says Minnesotans United tried to convince Call's group to work in a cohesive nature, and he and other MU leaders were dismayed and upset that they went off on their own. Call's group was tiny, raising just $30,000 to MU's $12 million. Minnesotans for Equality tapped Chris Cluey, the then Vikings punter, to run radio ads. Cluey hammered exactly the points Call felt would appeal to those young male conservative voters. Carlbaum admits Minnesotans United was slower to embrace Cluey, and he turned out to be a surprising force in the campaign.
I think it did matter a great deal, and I give him great credit for not only recognizing the impact he could have, but capitalizing on it and making a difference with Chris in this whole effort.
And now that it's all over, Call says she appreciates everything Carlbaum and Minnesotans United accomplished, and she's grateful she can marry her partner. Under Carlbaum's leadership, Minnesotans United persuaded a majority of voters to defeat the amendment in November. Fresh from victory, the campaign decided to push for a marriage bill in the 2013 legislative session. Suddenly, instead of trying to sway millions of voters, Carlbaum's target was much smaller, 201 lawmakers. Unlike the amendment, when no matter what, there would come a vote on Election Day, Carlbaum says the unpredictability of the legislative process was nerve-wracking.
Making sure that the vote was taken, making sure that the votes were there, making sure that the bill wasn't amended in a negative way that would have created problems for it, I really got nervous.
Minnesotans United had a seasoned team of lobbyists, including Christine Almeida, who'd spent 23 years navigating the wild ride of Capitol politics. One of her clients is Minnesota Public Radio. As the end of the session loomed, she remembers Carlbaum worried there wasn't much time left on the clock.
It was like, gosh, there aren't that many days left. Is this not going to happen? And what does it mean that they're not scheduling? Does it mean something? Should we be reading something into this? And, you know, I think that was the aspect of the legislative campaign that was maybe one of the most challenging for him. But overall, you know, he handled the whole thing like a pro and obviously, again, thrilled with the result.
Some people not thrilled with the results were opponents of same-sex marriage. Minnesota for Marriage didn't respond to an interview request for this story. Jason Adkins of the Minnesota Catholic Conference wrote, quote, "Richard seems like a hardworking fellow who genuinely believes in what he's doing. I wish him well," end quote. Frank Schubert, who ran the amendment campaign for Minnesota for Marriage, told NPR News in an email, quote, "His campaign won, barely, because he had vastly superior resources," end quote. Minnesotans United enjoyed a 2-to-1 financial advantage in the amendment fight, and Carlbaum says the lobbying campaign for the marriage bill cost more than $2 million. During both campaigns, Carlbaum says he tried not to engage his opponents.
They're on an island, and we've ignored them for 2 years, and we'll continue to ignore them, because the island they're on is shrinking by the day, and we don't have to engage them. Because the longer we just allow them to be on that island alone, and the more we have an authentic conversation with Minnesotans, that's ultimately what matters.
The National Organization for Marriage has pledged to spend $500,000 to defeat Minnesota lawmakers who voted for same-sex marriage. Carlbaum's next job in politics will be to lead Minnesotans United's new PAC to re-elect those lawmakers. In the meantime, Carlbaum will marry his partner in December and says he plans to attend a lot of weddings beginning in August when the new law goes into effect. When the political season of 2014 heats up, Carlbaum will test the strength of the Minnesotans United political movement for a third time.
That's the NPR News Update for Thursday, May 23rd. I'm John Wanamaker. Thanks for listening.